Ray, you're part of the University of Alberta's iGEM team this year. What's the project?
Well, our project this year is we are genetically engineering a normal household fungus. Its name is Neurospora crassa. We're genetically engineering it so that we can produce an end product biodiesel by inputting cellulose, which is a normal agricultural and industrial waste product in many of Alberta's industries.
So where exactly does this fungus grow, or where does it come from?
The fungus grows on trees and wood. It generally eats cellulosic biomass of any sort. It generally grows after a forest fire. It's seen on charred trees, and it eats away the dead wood.
So what made you look at that particular organism?
We were looking at it particularly because of its very exceptional ability to eat cellulose. And a lot of organisms, their problem is that people try to put the ability to eat cellulose into them. And we're starting with an organism that eats cellulose very, very well, which is something that is rare in the animal world that we're trying to exploit.
So since iGEM is genetically engineered machines, what are you doing to this poor little natural fungus?
We're trying to exploit its natural machinery, basically, on the inside. So instead of trying to throw in all sorts of strange new, machines that sometimes you hear about in the news, we're just trying to get it to metabolize things faster so that we can produce more of what we want. So it's essentially trying to get it to eat faster, grow faster, and then hopefully that'll give us enough of an output to make it economically viable.
So the cellulose, where does the cellulose come from?
The cellulose can come from any sort of agricultural waste product. I mean, from hay, any hay bales, anything that's rotting especially, from the lumber industry. I know pulp mills have a huge output of pulp mill sludge, which is high in nutrients, but we can't use it for very much since nothing can break it down. So we were looking into maybe having that as a substrate too.
How is it then that you actually take the cellulose from these various sources and then turn it into the end product of the biodiesel?
And the way we'll be doing it is the organism eats cellulose and it turns that into energy. But the base sort of theory behind it is that cellulose is carbon. So when an organism will intake carbon, it can turn that carbon into many other forms of carbon, since you can't destroy an element, it just turns into different forms. So we want to turn the carbon from cellulose into fatty acids. And fatty acids, like you might find in oil or butter or anything like that, can be esterified through a chemical process to produce biodiesel. So we're essentially trying to take the cellulose carbon, turn it into fatty acid, to turn that into biodiesel. And it's a relatively well-characterized process.
Well, how does this differ from the biodiesel processes that are already in place that people are using? What makes this any better?
Well, the biodiesel processes that Alberta currently has in place at the moment, 70% of the production cost associated with biodiesel is buying the feedstocks themselves. And because we have to use food, generally, because food is sugar, and sugar is easier to eat than cellulose, we're buying up a lot of food, which can otherwise be used for livestock and for other various things. A good example is corn, which is an extremely, extremely large stock at the moment because it's needed for everything. When we use corn for biodiesel, instead of using corn for food for livestock or for other forms of fuel, it's sort of a huge burden on the economy. So it'd be nice if we could use waste, which is very low value and just gets thrown out anyway, use waste instead of actual food.
In your presentation, you mentioned that there is an important recycling aspect to this process. Could you explain that further, please?
Yeah, I can. In our conversion process from getting from fatty acid to biodiesel, we're looking at a process that hopefully can use many of the same chemicals over and over. Ideally, in the long run, we could recycle all of them, but it's much better to not have to keep adding chemicals. You just want to keep the chemicals in there, let them react, and then recycle them over to use again so that you don't have to make the chemicals, since the chemicals themselves have an actual fossil fuel cost associated with their actual production. So we'd like to keep recycling to a very high level.
It seems that in the project that you've picked, it has a lot of applications or potential applications down the road. What do you see those as being?
Well, potential applications would be, as a pipe dream, we're looking at industrial applications, obviously. So any type of mill which produces this waste, for example, pulp mills or any type of farm that produces this waste, having an industrial size conversion bioreactor to produce biofuel and especially diesel would be a huge boon, since they can use their own waste to produce diesel, and diesel is used in large trucks and commercial vehicles because of its high torque power. So it would obviously be a huge boon for that. We were also thinking of commercial applications, since more and more cars nowadays are using diesel. We'd like to even have say, in the future, apartment blocks or even inside the city designated centers where people can recycle things and get biodiesel out of it. And, I mean, the Alberta government now mandates 2% of all petrodiesel has to be of biodiesel, and they're thinking of raising it to 5%. I mean, at about the maximum you can get of biodiesel and petrodiesel that can still be viable in our cold weather is about 20%. So that's a huge increase in biodiesel we're looking at in the future. So, I mean, there's going to be a need for it. So we hope we can fill that need.
You still have a few months before you actually present at the iGEM competition in Boston. What are some of the things that you have to do still to get ready for that?
A lot of lab work. A lot of it's research and development at the moment. We also have to make sure we're not stepping on anyone's toes proprietary-wise, since a lot of this universities and people and research, they're all interconnected, and some things you can tell and some things you can't tell. Because it's a very open competition, we make sure we're not harming anyone's future prospects. So we're trying to keep it as clean as possible without any need for secrecy, I guess is the word you could say. So, I mean, there's still a lot of development to go through, but I think we're making huge strides with that.
Now, this is a workshop that you're at this weekend. You had a workshop previously, and there's still going to be more workshops coming up to help you present. It seems like there's a lot of people who are quite keen on helping your team and those from the other universities really make a good presentation. What does this say to you?
Well, especially Alberta Innovates Tech Futures. I mean, they gave us a massive sum of money and all the help from all the workshops, and it really shows that the government, I mean, like, say what you will about them, they're helping us out, and they're helping out just basic science in universities. And, you know, sometimes as a university student, you can get cynical about levels of government, but, I mean, here is, right now, the verifiable, they are helping us at the moment.
What did you get out of the entrepreneurial lab workshop yesterday?
It's okay to be a student since your life isn't over. The entrepreneurial boot camp really showed me, I guess, when you're a student, you don't really think about the private side or the business side. You're sort of more focused on sort of helping the world and its very grand ideas, and the business side can really help the world too. And especially as a student, it's very difficult to get used to people talking about large sums of money, but that's how the world's run, and you need to start getting used to large sums of money if you're out in the real world, since that's how movers and shakers happen. So I think it was a really good introduction to even just basic ideas of business that you have to work hard for a while without a lot of payoff. I mean, it might be some tough years, but I mean, everyone, if you do it right, you get payoff at the end, which is kind of a good thing to tell students when they're in it in the long run.
What got you interested in iGEM in the first place?
I was interested in iGEM specifically because we have a course at the university which introduces people to iGEM, but I was really interested in just the synthetic nature of it, since, I mean, international genetically engineered machines, I mean, genetically engineered machines, that's kind of a scary topic, and I really wanted to see what that was about, and see if I could teach people about it, since I know it's GMOs and genetically modified anything are a really hot topic right now, and people are afraid of it. And, I mean, like, the science we do in the lab, there's almost nothing to be afraid of. There's literally nothing to be afraid of. So, I mean, it's a very controversial subject, and I wanted to learn a lot more about it.
Well, good luck with the project that you're working on right now, and I hope that you do well when you get down to Boston. Thank you very much, Ray.
Thank you very much.